Welcome again to this first talk about the four foundations of mindfulness. I'll be basing this course of four talks on the Satipatthana Sutta. Even though I'm taking 4 weeks to talk about this sutta with the idea of really delving into it, I still can't possibly cover or even just touch on all that's in this sutta. I'm a Tanasanti, and I had a little correspondence during the week, and we were talking about how much there is to it. People are still analyzing it. My goal is really just to reveal more aspects of this teaching and provide you with a broader field of understanding and practice than I possibly could do in one talk. Before we enter into the sutta, I need to ask you to please abandon any idea you might have that mindfulness is just about watching the breath and that thinking is prohibited because, well, there's plenty of watching the breath in this practice, but there's so much more. It's impossible to get the benefit of the Satipatthana Sutta without practicing with an expanded field of attention than just one thing. Just being aware of the breath. When the sutta talks about observing the breath, it starts out with very particular qualities of what happens when we breathe, such as, are we breathing in or out? Is this a long breath or a short one? And then it quickly expands into the whole body. In doing this, it's purposefully engaging in something wider than many people think meditation is, and it's called contemplation. We need to be able to keep our mental eye on more than one ball at a time. We need to do this in daily life, or we couldn't function as people in a human society. I just took a test at the DMV, and before I did that, I reviewed the driver's handbook because, you know, I haven't looked at the thing since you had to hold it on paper. It talked about keeping your attention on the space around you while you drive. Now, that space is incredibly complex. And we all know that while we're doing that, our attention includes a lot more than the space around us. I mean, sometimes we're drinking coffee or talking to a passenger or reviewing our shopping list or the fight we had last night. Our attention can expand and hold many complex things, or multitasking wouldn't be as popular as it is today. This flexibility of our attention is because the brain works really fast. The Abhidharma refers to something called mind moments, and they're so teeny. And they go by so fast, I mean, just faster than anyone can even imagine. So we can think of this expanded attention that's required for contemplation as a split screen or having a video conference with two or more people, where you might be looking back and forth so quickly, quicker than you even realize. So you're seeing both people at the same time, even though they're separate. They're separate images. Now, having just two objects to observe at once pares it down a lot from the complexity of driving, and it becomes more like what we're doing in contemplation. We're giving our mental focus a little more leeway, but still paying close attention to these few selected objects, one of which remains the experience of the body, usually as it's breathing. So yeah, you're watching the breathing, but you're also paying attention, close attention, to other things. So Webster's calls this quiet contemplation, as if you're lost in contemplation of a scene. But let's forget the word lost, because you're continuing to be mentally active in a way that we've all experienced, where attention is held in one place with this attitude of curiosity. What's going on? So it's like a very light touch of investigation that's part direct experience and part knowing, a mental awareness of what you're looking at, what you're observing. So with the things that the Satipatthana Sutta directs our attention to, we're going to be feeling our way through this subject with the aid of memory and discernment, mental activities. And, you know, we do this all the time, not just with regard to the four foundations of mindfulness. When we contemplate, we might be meditating and remember a teaching, and then you'd compare it to what's going on in your meditation. And if it's a match, then you have a better understanding of that teaching. And if it isn't a match, you ask a teacher, what was that? There are times when contemplation can get logically analytical, but there are a lot of people for whom that's a trap, because it's a mental habit that we can get caught in and lose the meditative aspect of contemplation. So keep the mental activity simple is kind of the guideline here. So let's go ahead and get into the sutta. The first thing it tells us is that we're about to learn the path to overcoming internal suffering, or dukkha, and eliminating all causes of it. And that's nibbana, or nirvana. Then we're told that there are four foundations, and these are the crucial objects for us to contemplate, and they are the body, vedana, or preferences that we have, the mind, and dharma. Now, even in the process of listing these objects of contemplation, the sutta adds after each one of them for unmistakable emphasis this phrase to describe how we should contemplate them. And the phrase is diligent, clearly knowing and mindful, free from desires and discontent in regard to the world. So again, our contemplation is not idle daydreaming or drifting thoughts coming in and out. We're bringing attention and energy to this knowing. And we're holding a special attitude, one that I discussed in the last talk I gave called Tending Our Inner Gardens. This attitude, free from desires and discontent, is a two-sided freedom. But it doesn't mean that we have to be completely free, liberated, or enlightened before we can even begin. We're asked to try to be free from being controlled, on the one hand by aversion, and on the other hand by desire. So we don't stick to pleasure or fight having negative feelings. I sum this attitude up as unguarded awareness. Desire and discontent can enter the mind. We haven't done anything wrong if that happens. But the mind just lets them pass through without grasping onto them because it's free from them, at least at that moment. So you're meditating, you're contemplating the object that was suggested by the sutta, like in our meditation this evening, while you're watching the breath or feeling the breath fill the body with relaxation. And suddenly you're thinking about a fight you had the other day or some way that you felt disrespected. And maybe there's a feeling that comes along with this. Nothing has gone wrong at this point. Just let that go through, or try to let it go through. Meaning, let it pass away. And continue with your observation of what the sutta is talking about. If you can do that, you've done exactly what the sutta is suggesting. The first time we try this, maybe it doesn't go so well. But remember, this is a practice. So keep your expectations of what happens low enough that in the beginning you give it a try. Maybe it doesn't work. You try again. Maybe it starts to work. And eventually you develop this skill of being able, without getting stuck to the idea that you have to do it right, to let go, to let the thought pass through, to let the urge to cling to the thought just drop away. What we're doing is practicing freedom from dukkha. We're practicing it. The second noble truth tells us that dukkha, or internal suffering, is caused by excessively wanting or disliking things. Those are both forms of clinging, and that's the cause of dukkha. So this exercise in trying not to cling is intended to strengthen the mind's ability to let go, and sometimes even not cling at all. Let's start to look at what the sutta is asking us to contemplate now that we know the approach that we're wanting to take. The first thing that we're going to contemplate is the body. And we're going to look at it in a lot of different ways. The body is by far the largest part of the Satipatthana Sutta. And that's perfectly appropriate because it is so important. The body contains five of the six gateways to our consciousness, those physical senses: sight, hearing, taste, smell, and touch. The sixth gateway is the mind, generating memories, thoughts, emotions, etc. And we will deal with that in December. Because the body contains our senses, it's the source of all the information we have about our immediate physical experience, what you might call our reality. It also tells us about what it feels like to be in this body, to be embodied awareness. And this is all really important information. The body is also always right here and right now, unlike the information that comes from the mind. It can be in the future. It can be something that happens, is happening now, somewhere else. But the body, right here. So being aware of the body holds us in the present moment, like an anchor holding a ship in the water. With some of our attention held on the body, we're able to observe the activity of the mind at a little bit of a distance, enough to remember that what the mind tells us isn't always true. However, the body will respond to what the mind tells us, even if it's false. Because the body is like the orchestra that plays our emotions, the way chimes hanging outside your window play the wind. If you're going to have an emotion, you're going to feel it in the body. You may be really busy trying to stay in the mind, staying in the story, telling it over and over, because we don't like to feel bad, and a lot of emotions do. But the body is going to be feeling it anyway. As a result, all of our experience happens here in the body. It's all right here, walking around as us. That's why the Buddha said that all the Dharma can be found in this fathom-long body. Anālayo, who wrote the book Satipatthana, points out that paying attention to the body can help us relax and be more receptive to a clear understanding of our experience. If you followed Amatanasanti's guided meditation, then you witnessed how closely observing the body does have a calming effect. And you might have noticed that this evening as you were practicing, breathing in and out, calming the body. Once the body relaxes, any amount of tension will register if we're paying attention. So we can notice it. And usually what we experience is on a continuum from the first tiny frisson of distress to sweats and shakes. Being able to see the way the body responds to what goes through our minds lets us see the cause and effect relationship between them. And when we do, we are witnessing the second noble truth in action, that clinging is causing our dukkha. And at that point, we can also wisely respond to whatever is upsetting us by turning our attention away from those distressing states of mind to wholesome ones like loving kindness, delight, generosity, sympathetic joy. When we see someone that we feel positive about being happy, it makes us happy. And if we practice enough with it, then even seeing someone we don't know or someone maybe we don't like being happy, we can feel that joy ourselves. Or if none of these states of mind really are accessible to us, then we can just turn our attention back to concentrating on the breath for a while. And that's where the Satipatthana Sutta has us start. By first we arrange the body into a posture that supports us with ease, and then we bring mindfulness to our breathing. The contemplation is simple. We just know that the body is breathing in and out. This is just like a nonverbal awareness of in, out. That's contemplation, pretty much at its simplest. But then the complexity goes up just a notch to knowing whether the inhale or exhale is short or long. Then it gets slightly more complicated and kind of fun when we form the intention to breathe in and out while experiencing the whole body. Unlike Amitanasanti last week, this week I didn't have you stand up or move in your chair. The sutta actually states that we should do this sitting down. Being aware of the whole body from feet to head involves some visualization of the body. When we do stand or move, then we can feel those muscles and get a tactile awareness of the whole body. But in this contemplation, it's a visualization. I'm kind of curious. Tonight, when we were visualizing calming the whole body by breathing in and out, did anybody feel that? Did anyone feel a sense of calm with this visualization? Good, I see heads nodding. Whenever I do this, I'm always surprised how delightful it can be. It's one of those joys that's just unconditional because it depends on nothing else in the world. So there's nothing for us to cling to. We just turn our attention toward that contemplation, and there's this kind of free pleasure. So in pretty much the same way, the Satipatthana Sutta has us explore the various postures that we can arrange the body in. There's lying down, sitting, and standing. To be honest, I have to point out that there is another refrain that is repeated in every progression of the Satipatthana Sutta. It asks us to contemplate the body internally or externally as we observe experiences arise and pass away. This is getting more complex. There are many explanations of what it means by externally and internally. And I have to tell you that I have yet to encounter one that makes sense to me without taking more time to explain it than we have tonight. So I'm just going to leave that alone for now. As for contemplating experiences arising and passing away, this gives us a front row seat to observe impermanence. This is impermanence not just of things in the world, but of the internal phenomena that we think of as us. My emotions, my worries, my thoughts, they just arise and pass away if we don't cling to them. The last subject of the sutta that we'll cover tonight is activities. This is daily life practice at its most elemental. It has us maintaining bare knowledge, which is what I was talking about with contemplation, of the body as it executes the tasks that it does for us. You know, this robot that we command to do these things for us. In this contemplation, we remain mindful as we experience the body moving the arms and legs, wearing clothes, walking, or moving through space, carrying things, eating, drinking and tasting, sitting, standing, urinating, defecating, talking or keeping silent, falling asleep, and waking up. So in other words, every experience of the body is something to study in this semi-meditative way. And this has been the mainstay of my practice for the last several years. As an object of contemplation, the body is wonderfully convenient because it's always there. You never run out of body to observe. It can be pleasant or unpleasant. And I get to watch desire or aversion arise and maintain the intention to let it go and go on watching this body moving around this amazing world. Especially when I'm on my camping retreat in the woods during the summer, I stay mindful of all of the sights, sounds, smells, and other sensations as this body goes about the tasks of occupying a campsite. It helps to be alone, but this practice is possible when others are around. I can observe my posture when I listen or talk, or notice the way my body is responding emotionally. It's a practice that's always available. So now we've covered two of the eight pages that the sutta occupies in Anālaya's book, which is 318 pages long. So you know that I have just touched the mountaintops. But I hope that you now know the way to contemplate the four foundations and the attitude to do it with. A relaxed, multi-pointed mindfulness with the intention not to cling to anything, to let go of whatever desires or aversions enter the mind. And it's also important to recognize and appreciate the incomparable importance of the body containing our awareness, responding to events in the world. Breathing is the beginning of the survey that includes the whole body in every one of its positions, movements, and activities. I've brought practice guides that are on the table by the Dana Basket, and they suggest ways for you to explore the practices I've talked about tonight during the coming week and for the rest of your lives. You can contact me if you want to talk by phone during this course. It'll be the week after each Dharma talk. Now, next week, we're going to finish up with the body and go on to Vedana, the roots of what we like, don't like, or feel neutral toward, which I'm going to be referring to as our preferences. And then the mind and the Dharma, which are the last two foundations, will encounter them in December. Thank you.